This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Friends and family, welcome to this month's journey through uncharted courses of the wrestling world throughout history, here, there, and everywhere. Welcome to Through the Looking Glass. I am your co-host, Scott Criscola. WrestleMania Modern Day is in the rearview mirror. So tonight we're going to rebook the whole... No, we're not. we're going to rebook the main event and make it better.
can you do that?
I don't think you can. Not night two. Not night two. Good evening, Thunder from Down Under, Dave Hall. How are you?
I'm doing well, Scott. I'm doing well. I think you're right. I think it was a very good main event. You know, we could all probably find ways it could have just been improved slightly, but I don't think anyone's gonna, you know, complain that we didn't get value for money in that main event this year. That's for sure.
Yeah, I think looking at the and I'll get more into my ratings and my when we on this coming actually in a couple of days it'll drop if you're listening to this when it drops the newest episode of Place to Be Nation's main event. I'll talk about my thinking. The one match I'm probably in the minority on this because I love the champion in the match. I'm probably one of the few people that thought. Of the two women's matches, I thought Io and Bayley was better.
Oh.
And I love Rhea. I kind of like Becky. I feel like I'm kind of waning on her. I thought the match was good, but I feel like it might have slightly under-delivered. But I feel like Io and Bayley kind of went an extra mile that I wasn't expecting. Other than that, every match on this show... On this show, pretty much is what I anticipated. I don't know. What did you think?
I enjoyed it. I can see where your argument comes from. I initially felt the Bayley EO match started a little slow, but it did build really, really well, and they told a very good story. I think overall. I think they lucked into something. I felt that the Bayley EO backstory wasn't built well enough. I don't think they really built it in the lead up to the event as well as they could have. But I think they got the benefit of a crowd that loved Bayley, and the crowd we went back to the old singing, ooh, you know, Bayley, you know, the Bayley song. The Bayley song was being sung by the crowd. They really got into the match, and I think that really helped a lot. The crowd sort of helped elevate, and then I think both workers really built on the back of that energy, and it really built to a good finish.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I definitely see that. And again, I love Rhea, and I think I don't know. Maybe I'm just Becky burnt out. Becky Burnout instead of Becky Two Belts. I know she's going to take some time off. There's a lot of people taking time off. I think she's taking time off. Her hubby's taking time off. The chief is taking time off.
Together with kids.
Yeah. The final boss is he's leaving, period. But I'm looking forward to the build to the next pay-per-view, Backlash France, which will be May 4th in... Well, France. I think we're going to see some different things. I had a feeling Jay and Jimmy was going to not hit the beats. No brother versus brother. And we've talked about both brother-brother matches, I believe, here on the show over the time we've been doing it. Unfortunately, the first brother versus brother, which, of course, was Bret and Owen at 10, set the bar so high that it's very hard for anybody to reach that point. Obviously, Matt and Jeff at 25 didn't. Their rematch that I saw live definitely did at Backlash 09. But Jay and Jimmy just, I don't know. It kind of went the way I had a feeling it was going to. So yeah. I can't, you know, you can't totally get mad at that. But the tag was fine, if not really long, the main event on Saturday. And the end was perfect. The only thing, and I no disrespect to Taker. We are going to get to our topic tonight, folks, I promise. I guess there was the original plan was for Stone Cold to replace Taker. So instead of the gong, we were going to hear the glass. Well, we didn't hear a gong anyway. That would have the play. I mean, because we all know the Steve Rock legacy. The play Philly would have sunk into the ground if that is how it ended, and him eating a stunner, because no one sold a stunner like Rock did. He was amazing. Having said that, the main event did exactly what it meant to do, and Cody is the face of this company now. And I think he'll revel in it. He's got the pedigree to be the baby face of a company like his pop did. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I think that did exactly right. You know what I found interesting, Dave, and I mentioned this to you off mic. I was waiting for the vignette for WrestleMania 41. We never got it. The big announcement was that Memorial Day weekend, there's going to be a show in Saudi Arabia. Queen of the Ring will be May 20. What is it? May 20. Well, it's Memorial Day Saturday, whatever that is. Because obviously Memorial Day Sunday is AEW Double or Nothing. But they're actually going to do a SmackDown that Friday in Saudi. So they're going to do SmackDown Friday night in Saudi, and then King and Queen of the Ring Sunday in Saudi. I don't know if it's Jeddah or wherever the heck they are. Memorial Day weekend, and of course, Memorial Day Sunday is AEW's Double or Nothing. So that was the announcement. And obviously they did, you know, a couple of France, but no WrestleMania 41. The rumor is, and this is funny, the rumor is, and I don't know if I totally believe this, but I don't know if it was Cultaholic or SC Scoops. I'm not sure where I read it or saw it. The highest bidder at the moment is Minneapolis, with WrestleMania taking place, obviously, at US Bank Stadium, where the Vikings play, which has a roof. But WWE is very apparently lukewarm to that idea, and they are waiting for a city to outbid them. I don't know if that's totally true. I from what I've heard, it's not the Mania itself. Like, it's not the venue or the two nights. It's the fact that it still gets pretty cold in early April in Minneapolis, and it could still snow. And, you know, if anybody who's listening watched WrestleMania night one in Philly, and I can obviously firsthand can tell you from the PTB crew and us that it was a little brisk on Saturday night in Philly.
Yeah, I heard them. Michael Cole was just reiterating that point about every 5 minutes in the show.
Yeah, it was getting annoying after a while that every, 5 minutes the friggin' temperature would come up. So I'm sure they're wondering, not necessarily the two nights of Mania itself. I think it's the week and the fact that there's, you know, the infrastructure, obviously indies will be around, etc. But if the weather could be so bad that it curtails tourism, I could see WWE's point, but at the same time, Mania is Mania. I think people would come anyway. My take, my opinion, Dave, and obviously I'm curious your thoughts. I feel like the next 3 years are kind of in their mind anyway. WrestleMania 4-1 will be somewhere. I think Minneapolis is going to end up getting it. I think WrestleMania 42 in 2026 is going to be in Vegas. And I think WrestleMania 43 in 2027 will be in Nashville. Because I know they loved the city. I think they loved the city when they were there a year and a half ago for SummerSlam. But obviously, the big thing that they're waiting for is the Tennessee Titans are getting a new building, so with a roof. So, because I'm sure Nashville could be a little brisk in early April, but I know they love the city for the tourism aspect of it. And I know with the PTBers that went, I didn't go to that trip, but said the place was banging in terms of parties and, you know, bars and music and stuff. So that is what I think their plan is the next 3 years. So I think 42 is Vegas and 43 is Nashville. Next year is the one that's weird, because if they're fishy on Minneapolis, I'd be curious where they would go, you know?
Yeah. And I can see, I mean, we know the WWE likes to make use of those new stadiums and try and do something big once the stadium's just been opened. And we've seen that over the past few years. So I could certainly see the Nashville one being a prime example. And we know Las Vegas is only just sort of, they haven't been, their stadium hasn't been around long. So I could see that argument. I guess when it comes to Minneapolis, maybe, you know, the rumors, you know, maybe they're a bit wary of going to Minneapolis, because when it comes to the Hall of Fame, they've already put in Vern Gagne and half of the AWA roster, so they've got no local Hall of Famers to put in anymore. And I think Hunter might be worried that Greg Gagne will try and stage an AWA invasion at WrestleMania. So they're trying to steer clear of that sort of those concerns. And
I think you might have created a topic for a future show for us, an alternate universe where there's an AWA invasion. Is that Jake the Milkman Milliman? that's good, Dave. I like that one. Anyway, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But I could also see, I always feel like WWE's fallback city is New Orleans. They did two manias there in the span of 5 years. They did 30 and 34. I think they love New Orleans. I know people that went down there that love New Orleans as a mania city. I feel like that's their fallback. Now, any city can do SummerSlam. If SummerSlam has become a stadium city, I totally can see that. I could totally see that. They could do it anywhere because weather is irrelevant. Mania is very tough. There's limited, somebody said, oh, what about Mania in Denver? That's not going to happen. SummerSlam in Denver? Yeah, maybe. That might not be a bad city. But Mania, no. First off, the stadium doesn't have a roof, so good luck with that. But anyway, yeah, that's the problem is, unfortunately, WrestleMania, you got to be picky because it's not, now you're not just thinking of weather for the actual show, you're thinking of weather for the week, because now Mania as a week has expanded to bigger things. And obviously WWE knows that people come into town to not just watch Mania. They go to WrestleCon and they go to Supercard of Honor, or they'll go to, you know, any of those kind of shows. Yeah. So they know that they need to get the tourism in for that 4 or 5 day stretch. And if the weather is, you know, incredibly atrocious, it'll hurt tourism, regardless whether the two nights of Mania are indoors or outdoors. That's completely irrelevant. So anyway. Now, in the alternate universe we're going to tonight, it might be WWE that's out of business, and we would have Starcade weekends.
Yes, of course, absolutely.
So this topic is one that we – this is one of the ones – and Dave, correct me if I'm wrong. I feel like this is one of the ones that we got off of – maybe off of a mailbag episode that we now expand on, because we did kind of lean on this a little bit in past episodes, but we're really going to dive in to it this tonight. So what is our journey tonight?
Yeah, it's one that's sort of hovered around for a while since the early incarnation of this show. So and it should be interesting. So April, well, the end of March, April, did you know it has been 23 years now since World Championship Wrestling ceased to exist? Since Extreme Championship Wrestling ceased to exist.
Yes.
23 years, that's a long time. And I certainly know, you know, there's always the thought process. What could have been? What might have happened if, you know, a company like WCW had stayed in business? And there's been a lot of stuff on the internet. Eric Bischoff has talked about what he had planned to do if Fusion had bought the company. And you know, there's been the, you know, what the original plans were when Vince and Shane, or when Vince bought it, and that whole idea. But it really, it's got that thought process of what might have happened if WCW had stayed in business. How might the company have looked moving forward? What might have been the focal points? What superstars would have been developed? And that's really what we're going to look at in this episode of Through the Looking Glass Day. We're going to imagine a world where WCW stayed in business. Now, we were talking before we went on the air that we're not necessarily having any specific buyer or owner in mind. We're not sort of saying this is Eric Bischoff's company or, you know, Shane McMahon in charge or whatever. We're just imagining a world where WCW continued to live. And we're going to talk about some ideas today about what that company may have looked like moving forward. And is there a possibility to rebuild and grow that company, which really had gotten into some real terrible position by early 2001. It's I just thinking, you know, you think about this company that in 1998 was, you know, 1997 was the number one wrestling company in the business, and there was, you know, concern in late 96, early 97 that WWF might not survive, you know, with the amount of money that WCW was bringing in and what they had access to. And in the space of 3 years, the company went out of business. And it really was a very quick downfall, and that's not what this show is about. We're not about the downfall. We're just about the imagining if they'd stayed in business. So that's our journey tonight. That's where we're going. And I've brought up a few concepts there, Scott. And I wanna let's take ourselves back to 2001. Okay. March 2001, the announcement came that WCW was going out of business. What was your reaction at the time?
I mean, there was discussion. I mean, I remember, I know our good friend Matt Rotella has been watching on one of his chrono watches. Like he's actually up to the last like 2 months of WCW. He's watched almost every Nitro. He's watched almost every Thunder and I've watched every pay-per-view. I think most of us have, but I think his next pay-per-view coming up is Super Bowl Revenge, which was the February of 01. But it was rumored in like 2000 that they were that Turner was going to be sold to AOL to AOL.
That's right.
And it was kind of rumbling in late 2000. Now at this point, WWF was absolutely kicking the crap out of them. I mean, consistently kicking. 2000 was an amazing year for the WWF. Probably the only two shows that the only two pay-per-views that year that probably weren't great up to that point were probably WrestleMania, depending on your point of view, and King of the Ring probably fell flat. The Rumble was great. No Way Out, which I was at, was really good. Backlash was awesome. Judgment Day, that crazy attitude Iron Man with Triple H and Rock. Fully Loaded was great. SummerSlam was great. Unforgiven was a solid show. Survivor Series, Stone Cold comes back. WCW was firing on all cylinders. Meanwhile, WCW had that Bash at the Beach debacle with Hogan and Russo. WCW was absolutely in the toilet. So the rumblings had kind of started happening that I had read on like Lords of Pain and a couple of, because neither news sites during that early part of the internet were open. Lords of Pain was my jam at that time. Now it's like wrestling headlines, but they both count. That AOL was going to ditch wrestling. And then we find out that a company was going to buy them. They were called Fusion. At the time, I don't know if we knew at the time that Eric Bischoff was the kind of the driving force.
That was out. That information was out very, very early. I remember that news was out in probably the December time period, because by January there was the talk that they were in the they'd basically come to terms and they were just, things needed to settle. I can't remember what term they use in the business world, but it's that, dotting all of the I's and crossing all the T's and just making sure everything was going to be sound.
But then when it was announced that AOL Time Warner was not going to give, they were going to cancel all of the WCW programming. No more Nitro, no more Thunder. The brand. So Fusion dumped. And then we get to, I think it was the Friday before. Raw in Cleveland, as we were on the road to WrestleMania 17. And I remember I was at my girlfriend's house. We were in the basement and I went on the internet and futzing around, and I went on WWF.com just for the heck of it. And right there on the front of the main page said, WWF buys WCW. And I almost fainted. I never thought in a million years that was going to happen. And I'm thinking, what the hell? I don't know. Then we had that crazy Raw Nitro thing. I don't know. And then we go into WrestleMania and we go into the Invasion and blah, blah, blah. But to your answer, I was not surprised. I mean, we had known for about a year and a half the mismanagement going on in WCW, both creatively and fiscally. But I thought somebody was going to save it somehow. I think we all knew that ECW had a short shelf life, regardless of Paul or whatever, just based on their finances and how everybody was leaving because it could just make more money elsewhere. I think we all kind of knew, sadly, that ECW had a shelf life. But I don't think anybody thought that WCW was going to close up.
No.
I didn't see it. That's crazy. That was crazy talk, right? What did you think?
Yeah. I remember being at work and during a lunch break, just, checking out a couple of news sites like I often did. And I remember stumbling across the information that, the Fusion deal had fallen through and that, WWF, like you said, WWF had bought it. And I couldn't believe what I was reading. I thought like you did, I thought that the company would I thought WCW would probably have found someone who wanted to carry it on. I guess I was still, you know, in 2001, I'm in my, you know, my early to mid 20s. I, being so far removed from the US and, you know, in the, like you said, the earlier days of the internet news sites, didn't have a full grasp of all the business goings on at the time. But I always felt, you know, while you just had this feeling, WCW had been around, you always felt they were around a lot longer than they actually were. And I guess that's because there's the belief or the acceptance that WCW was just an extension of Jim Crockett Promotions. So you had this company that had a history that dated longer, even though WCW as an entity didn't come into being until 88, 89.
Right.
But you always felt, because it had that long history, like WWF had a long history, that it would just continue to exist. I guess I looked at it like a sporting competition, you know, the NFL, the NBA, the, you know, it might fall on rough times, but surely they will find a way to keep it going. Now you've got the teams, you've got the people involved that are going to make it work. And that's what I just assumed, that WCW, they would find a way and they would make it work. And when I read that WWF had bought them out, I really was in absolute shock. I remember reading the initial information that they were planning to run it as a separate promotion. But I think I always knew deep down inside that probably wouldn't be the case. Because of Vince's history of wanting to be the top dog. And, you know, while we've seen in recent years that, you know, WWF can, you know, they developed the NXT program and it sort of is presented as its own company, it's still not, and it's the breeding ground, and you move from NXT to the main roster. I don't think anyone – I never really thought that Vince running WCW as a separate entity would ever be the real case. I think that once I heard that, I knew they were dead and buried. And it was a big shock, and I think it was more there are talented guys on that roster. What is going to happen to them? Are they, you know, are their careers over? That was certainly what went through my mind.
Yeah. It's a shame, because for that couple of years, you know, from 96 till, I think the prime lump of WCW was obviously May of 96, when we first saw Scott Hall. I'll even say, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on Starrcade 97, because they did kind of survive that for a little bit. Goldberg helped that. But I'm going to say by early fall of 98, I think is when WWF clearly took the lead. They obviously broke the streak in April, the 82 weeks, whatever it is. WrestleMania 14 was a success. WCW was starting to dip a bit. We were getting NWO on, you know, on a rinse, you know, wash, rinse, repeat. And then Goldberg beating Hogan on that Nitro in Atlanta was like their last real legit spike.
Yeah.
But then I think, in my opinion, one of the greatest SummerSlams of all time, SummerSlam 98. Rock and Triple H on the ladder, Steve and Taker. I think that show buried them for good.
Yeah.
And then the finger poke and Foley and everything was just the icing on the cake, to be honest. So creatively, WCW was definitely in a malaise. Hmm. Russo did not help matters, and I feel like throughout 99 into 2000, they were just kind of spinning their wheels, trying to find something. There was a maybe a blip here and there. But the problem at that point was WWF was firmly in control. And then they went public, and they were on top of the world. And WCW just couldn't get out from under themselves. And then the worst thing that happened to them was AOL buying Turner and Ted hitting the bricks. Because I think by 98, 99, Ted was the only guy keeping WCW functioning. The minute Ted was booted from the board and he was no longer in active control of the programming or the of Turner Pro Broadcasting, WCW was on death's door at that point. Absolutely. And those AOL guys are like, I don't have time for this. We don't have time for this nonsense. We could see that they was making no money, and that's all Bischoff's fault because he didn't give a crap about pay-per-view revenues or anything. He just wanted to beat WWF in the ratings and put them out of business. And AOL's like, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. You've made no money here. The ATM is closed. Good night. See you later. Bye.
And it's interesting that you say that, because I think you touched on before the ultimate example of that mindset is the Goldberg beating Hogan on Nitro. Because can you imagine if they had built that for some major pay-per-view event? The money they could have generated, because of how big Goldberg had gotten at that time, they could have generated a massive buy, and maybe the battle would have gone on a bit longer, but that was not Bischoff's mindset. You highlighted that, and the impact was everything fell apart, which brings us to where we're at with our topic tonight. It brings us to this idea, what if WCW was able to survive? And we'll have a couple of assumptions underlying this. We're going to assume, look, AOL may have bought them out. A new buyer is going to come on board. And we're going to have to assume that the new buyer is able to negotiate a TV deal somewhere, because we know WCW is not going to be able to survive long term without a TV deal. Now, that's not the purpose of this episode of Through the Looking Glass. We're not going to look into that. We're just going to assume that a TV deal was made so that in April 2001, with a new owner at the helm, they've managed to negotiate something on some network or some cable channel that will allow the company to continue to the programming to be seen that allows you to build the pay-per-views and continue the company running. So again, another assumption that we're going to just underline with this episode. But yep. We've talked about where things were going, and we've talked about guys that were there. We've mentioned a few people who were there or whatever. So let's move ourselves into sort of April 2001, and we look at WCW, and they've been bought. They've been bought by a new owner. There's going to be a television deal. They're going to try and continue putting on programming. What guys would you look at keeping? Who needs to stay on the roster? Because we know they've got a big roster. We know that they've got guys that WWE ended up bringing in. We're not guys that didn't come in that maybe could have. Guys that have had long careers and guys that disappeared from the face of the planet for various reasons. Who would you keep? WCW had some talent. Who would you keep if you were building a roster?
Okay. What I'm going to do here to give me an idea is I'm looking right now at the card for the last pay-per-view that happened before this point. So I'm right now looking at WCW Greed, which took place on March 18th of 2001. It was a week before the last Thunder and last Nitro. It was 10 matches. That's a pretty big card. Jason Jett defeated Kwee Wee by pinfall. Would I keep the both of them? I don't know. Jason Jett, I didn't mind. I think Queeley, I would probably change the gimmick. I think that was kind of silly. Elix Skipper and Kid Romeo defeated the Filthy Animals for the inaugural Cruiserweight Tag Team titles, which I would have gotten rid of because that was a waste. I would have definitely kept Ray. That's no doubt about that. I would have kept Kidman. I would have kept Elix Skipper. I would have kept all four of them. Sean Stasiak defeated Bam Bam Bigelow by pinfall. Sean Stasiak? I don't know. He never really did much for me. Bigelow, I would have definitely kept. I think Bigelow would have been a good hand, you know, in the mid-card. Maybe give him a title here and there to kind of, would he be a main eventer? Maybe from time to time. But he's a guy that I like for kind of veteran stability kind of thing. Team Canada, Lance Storm and Mike Awesome defeat Hugh Morris and Conan by pinfall. I would have definitely kept Lance Storm.
Yep.
Mike Awesome? I'll get back to you on him. Hugh Morris, maybe. I like Hugh Morris. Solid mid-card guy. Conan?
He's one that I would have given the boot to.
Probably.
Never
liked. Yeah, I'm not a fan. Yeah, I don't know if I really loved him either. Let's see. Shane Helms defeats Chavo Jr. for the Cruiserweight title. I would have kept both of them. I would have totally kept I would have kept Shane and Chavo Jr. Absolutely.
Just before you go any further, I think one of the keys we can look at there is, and I think one thing that WCW did have going for them was that Cruiserweight division. We've already gone through a few of these Cruiserweight matches. And I think that was always a selling point the company had that did make them different right throughout that Nitro period that made them different from WWF was the Cruiserweights. They had always had the better Cruiserweight division. And even when WWF had their light heavyweight division, it never really got a great deal of attention. Basically, once they took the belt off Tucker. Off Tucker Michinoku, it was like, that's it. It was still around. They had the occasional match, and it lasted a couple of years. But I think that a lot of these Cruiserweights that are on the roster, I think I agree with you. We want to keep them around because that Cruiserweight division created something different for WCW, and they need that to distinguish themselves.
Yeah, totally. So I think most of the cruisers at that time in the company were definitely guys that you would want in your company. That there's no doubt. The Natural Born Thrillers, Sean O'Hare and Chuck Palumbo, defeated Totally Buffed Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell by pinfall for the tag team belts. Match was 54 seconds, which is probably 52 seconds too long. I would have kicked Luger and Bagwell to the curb.
Yeah,
I think their
run is done. They come to the end of their time in the company.
Yeah, they're done. Hit the bricks. O'Hare and Palumbo, I might have kept them around as a tag team. They were the tag team champions, so you needed champions, so I would have definitely kept them. But Luger and Buff were just taking up space, to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely, they were done. Luger was already two years past. Like he was really done in 98. Like he was done. He was just hanging on for paychecks, I think. And sadly, Buff had never really grown much with his in-ring work or his character work after his return from the neck injury. It just never really worked after that. The one thing I remember in 2001 was how high a lot of people were on Sean O'Hare as a future player in the business, not just WCW. He was being touted as a future star. in the business, and yeah, never really amounted to it. But I would certainly say in 2001, he would be someone you'd be going, "No, we want to keep him because this guy is supposed to be the future."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Lex Luger and Buff Bagwell are not. They are not. Ernest Miller defeated Canyon by pinfall. I think we all liked Canyon, and it was sad to see what happened to him down the line. I might have kept him around. Ernest Miller, I probably would have kept around. He was a great character. He was a guy that was funny. He was pretty good in the ring. I think he was a guy I would have kept. I think I would have probably kept Canyon too. He was a guy that would have been a solid mid-card guy. One thing I would have also done is I would have brought back the television title because they retired it they got rid of it in April of 2000. I think I would have brought the TV title back. I don't know what your thoughts on that is.
I always liked the TV title. I thought it was a
good
title.
So do I. Yeah. No, I think the TV title needs to come back. Booker T defeated, here's a big one. Booker T defeated Rick Steiner by pinfall. So Booker became the U.S. champion. I think there's no doubt in my mind. I would have totally kept Booker. That's without saying. I mean, you'd be a moron to let him go. Rick Steiner.
We'll
get to his brother in a minute, but
look, I think again, Rick Steiner's another one whose character was really played out by this point, and he probably is someone you wouldn't necessarily want. You need a break from him. He's someone that you might want to bring back in the future. I think the potential, and like you said, we'll talk about Scott in a minute, but the potential of maybe bringing the Steiner brothers back in a couple of years' time in that sort of legend sort of feel, you would want to have some sort of connection to Rick to allow that to occur in the future. But he's not someone you're going to want working every week. I think his character had played out as well by now. Got to remember, he's been in the company since 87.
Yeah. In fact, one of my chrono watches, he's about to get his TV title shot against Mike Rotunda at Starrcade 88. So he's, at my turn, he's just starting to get there. So, really, you know, after being in the varsity club. Yeah. All right. Dustin and Dusty against Flair and Jeff Jarrett. All right. Well, Dusty obviously was only doing this for the match. Obviously, Dusty wrestling wise he's done. Can I expand this? Because you asked me the question. Can I expand this to guys in the company? Do they have to be active wrestlers? Can I keep anybody, period? Or are we just talking wrestlers right now?
Oh, no, you can talk about who you want to keep around. Absolutely.
All right. Because why would you not keep Dusty to book? Duh. I mean, Flair still has wrestling chops at this point. Now, obviously, he had the confidence issue. But if WCW was sticking around, he would have he may have not had the confidence issue. He did have an 01 and 02. But Dusty obviously was not wrestling, but I would have definitely kept both of them. Dustin, definitely. Definitely. Jeff Jarrett. Need a good heel main eventer, which he pretty much at this point kind of was. Would you keep him?
I think you've just nailed it there. You need some guys that are credible enough to be in the upper card, but you may not necessarily want to drive or build the company around. And I think Jarrett can play that role for a little while you build up other guys. He's someone that you might put on a contract for a little while, but in the back of your mind sort of be like, this will probably be the last 12 months we see him before we let him go. We just need to build some other guys up, because a lot of the guys that are at the best spots that are going to get kept are baby faces, and you need a couple of good heels to continue. Otherwise, your roster is going to be a bit uneven. So I'd keep him for a while. He might change my mind with how he works, but I'm not sure that he's someone I'm going to have around long term. I think it's that short term. Need him to put over a couple of guys while we build some new stars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So I think that Jeff Jarrett's a guy that can stick around, whether he had to kind of rebuild him and or keep him in that sense of heat. Flair, obviously. Although Flair's interesting because obviously he's obviously continues to wrestle for quite a number of years. When he gets to WWF, six more years, I would assume. You figure it out. In WCW, I think a lot of it depends on who's on the creative team. Obviously, Flair and Dusty trust each other. Obviously, they've gone through the wars. I think they could work together. I think Flair and Dusty, I know they had their issues in the 80s, but they've both grown up and, you know, they figured stuff out. I'd like to think that Dusty and Flair could kind of work together on a creative group that eventually maybe Flair kind of weans off and wrestles maybe part-time, special occasions, big shows, and otherwise, you know, is a booker and helps book the younger guys. So that's why I would keep Flair around, and obviously I keep Dusty around. So I think I'd keep everybody in this one. And then the last two guys I would totally keep. The main event, the final pay-per-view match in the history of the WCW, Scott Steiner successfully defends the WCW world title against Diamond Dallas Page by technical submission in a Falls Count Anywhere match. I would obviously keep both guys today. I keep both guys. Scott Steiner, great heel. He would definitely have to be curtailed.
You need a strong leader.
You need to have some authority. You need
a strong leader, yeah. Leader to keep him in line.
Correct. Yeah. I love DDP, so I totally keep DDP. So the only guys on at least that wrestled on the last pay-per-view, Dave, that I would probably dump would be Sean Stasiak, Conan, Luger and Bagwell, probably Rick Steiner, although I don't know if Scott would get pissed off at that. And that's it. The only one that I'm still 50-50 on is Mike Awesome.
Yeah.
What do you think of him?
Mike Awesome never really I was never overly impressed with Mike Awesome. I think his success in ECW came because he was a bigger guy compared to the rest of the ECW roster. There's one thing we know about late ECW is there's a lot of guys that physically, stature-wise, were quite small, and Mike Awesome was bigger, muscular. He had that look of the more superstar-style level, but once you surround him in another company with other guys of a similar size, I think his work was not really that crash hot. Now, having said that, I absolutely love the Mike Awesome versus Masato Tanaka match on One Night Stand. I think that is a sensational match, and it shows that Awesome can work. But I don't think he ever did it consistently in either WCW or WWE. So I would have been happy to let him go. I think what we're seeing is there really was in the company, there was a lot of talent that you wouldn't get rid of. They had the building blocks that you would want to work with. Now there's a few guys that weren't on that pay-per-view, and I'm gonna throw some names at you and just tell me where you stand. This isn't the whole roster, but these are guys that were certainly under contract at the time. So couple of names. Now clearly these guys. Now the storyline at the time was that Scott Steiner was beating all these top level faces in retirement matches and getting rid of them. And I've heard Eric Bischoff on his podcast talk about the fact that the plan was to bring everyone back with the relaunch under Fusion Media. That was part of the storyline. So some guys that are missing that were under contract, Kevin Nash, would you keep him or would you let him go?
I would keep him just as a wrestler. He gets no creative authority whatsoever.
Okay. Scott Hall was still under contract at the time.
No.
Too dangerous.
Yeah, and honestly, he couldn't be trusted. I hate to say that because we did a great, great episode on Scott Hall last year. In fact, it was a year ago this month, if I remember correctly. I think it was a year ago this month that we did the Scott Hall episode. But at the time, he was a shit show. I got to be honest. I don't know if I could keep him around.
He's going
Let's do this. I would probably pull a Vince, like he did with, say, a William Regal, and say, "Listen, Scotty, I want to keep you around. I love you, man, but you gotta dry out."
Yeah.
So I'm gonna send you to rehab. I'm gonna clear your head, get in shape, relax, enjoy yourself, get the shit out of your system. When you're ready, come back. Let's do some stuff. So I think I wouldn't flat out fire him, Dave. I love Scott Hall too much to do that. But he would have to get somewhat of an ultimatum.
Yeah.
If you don't want to go to rehab, Scotty, there's nothing I can do for you. I can't trust you to get you in a high profile feud and then show up shit faced. Like that was that what they did to you in 99, that storyline was offensive. Similar to Road Warrior Hawk and all that. Like I just that disgusted me.
Yeah.
But Scott Hall would need an ultimatum. Scotty, you're gonna have to dry out.
Yeah.
And then come back and let's talk, because you're too valuable a guy to let linger. So.
All right, couple more. Disco Inferno.
I don't know if I would keep the Disco Inferno gimmick. Glenn Gilberti is another one of those guys that probably had some had ability that could be used. But I don't know if I trusted that gimmick. I think that gimmick ran its course. The Disco Inferno gimmick. I think it's time to kind of get things restarted. But I think I would get rid of that gimmick.
Now, but I may keep. You might. Yeah, and he could do some backstage stuff. He could be another one that you might move into a backstage role.
Exactly, I agree.
A young guy who just made his recent debut in the company. I'm not sure you've ever heard of this guy. He goes by the name AJ Styles. was sort of in the cruiserweight division at the time. What do you think about him?
Never heard of him. No. No idea. No. AJ, I would definitely keep.
Yeah.
Because I think his reputation preceded him on the indies. I know he was wrestling, I think it was NWA Wildside probably, or some of the, there's a guy that I would no doubt have kept. Because it's time to start building. That's a guy that I did, you know, he wrestled some dark stuff in WCW, in WWF, but that's a guy that I would probably not have, let go, because he could have gone anywhere. Where he could have gone, I don't know, but
we might talk about that a little later on. We might talk about it shortly. All right, couple more that look they weren't on the pay per view. Let's get serious. Let's finish up this. But look, there's two names that are very clearly there's a couple of names very clearly not on here. Sting and Goldberg.
Sting, yes. He's the face of the company. Always will be.
Yeah.
He's still healthy, still in good shape. He'd be a guy that I would like to put at the top, kind of to stabilize the main event. Maybe him and Scott Steiner have a good feud. Goldberg, I would be similar to a Scott Hall situation, because clearly Goldberg was not taught how the business works, and Bischoff pumped him up to be, you know, Steve Austin with a hairy chest, and thought that his shit didn't stink, and I think Goldberg would have to be sat down and given a primer on how the business works. You don't get to be undefeated forever. You don't get to be WCW champion for 1,316 days like somebody else just was. Sorry, not how it works. Not during that era. Not during that late 90s, early 2000s attitude era. Could you have a guy hold a world title and never lose? So at that point in 2001, if you and I were owning the company, I would have Dusty and the booking committee and those guys sit down with him and go, listen, man, you're like one of the most valuable people in the company, but you need to be told you got to play ball sometimes. You don't get to do what you did to Chris Jericho. You know,
I think you've nailed it there. I think he's one of the most viable people in the company. He's still new to the business, only a couple of years in. He's one of the most recognizable faces they've got.
Mm-hmm.
But you need your leadership to sit down and lay down the law. This is how this company is going to work. This is what we need. This is what we need from you. And if you're willing to play ball with us, we will work with you, and we will, good chance, they might not say this, but there's probably a good chance we'll push you to the moon. But if you don't work with us, if you're going to be difficult, we'll let you go. And I don't think WWE will pick you up. So I think, yeah, the big conversation needs to be had with Goldberg, because he's one of the few guys that you can still really benefit if you use him correctly. So the fans still wanted to see him. I remember I went and saw WCW when they toured here in Australia in July, August of 2000, and he got the biggest reaction in the building for the night. It was massive, nearly blew the roof off the place. So, the fans still wanted to see him, but you just want him to play ball. So, yeah. All right. So there's a lot of the guys. And like I said, we're not looking at every week. We don't want to go through 50, 60 guys. We want to touch. So I'm going to ask the question. If 2001 ECW have just gone out of business, so we've sort of looked at, these are the guys that we keep. We've recognized there's a bit of talent on the roster, and we're going to keep a lot of them. But we've noted ECW is out of business. There is some indie talent out there. And let's not jump into 20 guys or whatever, but two or three guys, who would you want to bring in? Who would you want to bring into the company that weren't on contract in March, April 2001?
Mm-hmm. Okay. One guy that I love, he's again another personal guy that I've always liked. I don't know if Ric Flair likes him or not, would be Shane Douglas. I love Shane Douglas, always did. Obviously he worked in WCW and he was there with Flair, but if I give Flair any kind of booking authority, I think Shane Douglas would probably leave and end up going to the WWF, I would think, depending on how much Vince wants him. Trying to think of other ECW guys.
I think
RVD. Goliath,
yeah, that's who I would be throwing a lot of money at. I'd be doing everything RVD. I could to bring RVD in.
Yep.
He's a guy that you can bring in as the new blood. And we saw what happened when he joined WWE. I think he's a guy that you could bring in to revitalize the top of the card. And that could be as either a face or a heel, either one. He's a guy that could become a main player in the company.
Yeah. So. Oh, totally. I mean, you get him in immediately. You have him start booking, you know, you have him start working in the cruiser division. Slowly, maybe he's a guy that you build to possibly winning the reinstituted world television title like he did in ECW. Have him start working with the Chavos and the Shane Helms and the Lance Storms and those kind of guys, and work that mid card for the TV title, and then slowly work him up.
I don't know that I'd start him so slow. I think I'd bring him in fast. I think I'd bring him in strong. I'd be putting him in against guys that at that bottom end of the top of the card, the guys like a Dustin Rhodes and or a Jeff Jarrett. I mean, this is what someone you keep Jeff Jarrett around for. If you have RVD in as a face, that's what the sort of role you want Jarrett to do, is build RVD up to be an immediate impact player.
You know who I think would work well with RVD, and I think he would because he's a good wrestling guy. You know who I'd put RVD with kind of out of the gate? Sting.
Yeah.
Because I trust Sting. I don't know if I trust Scott Steiner. That's my other thing too. We don't want a Triple H Unforgiven 2002.
No.
And with Scott Steiner, I would be worried about that because Scott Steiner's a whack job who liked being at the top of the card. If you want to push him that fast, Dave, I would probably put him with Sting. But I really think I would want to push him to at least hopping right into the TV or U.S. title picture. But Booker's a face. So, but that's interesting. I agree with you that let's put it this way. I think the fans would probably not want us to put him low. I think we'd have no choice. I think we'd be very Daniel Bryan-ish. Speaking of him, maybe we'll talk about him in a little bit. But that he may be a guy, Dave, that we can't afford to put too low to start. You know what I mean? That's why I agree with you. I'm just saying that if we want to give him a title to kind of work his credibility and work him in and let him just put on solid matches before giving him that next step, that's what I would do. You want to push him higher than that? I would not disagree, but I would be very careful who to put him with in a main event situation. I would have to be somebody like Sting or DDP, somebody that I trust. Somebody that I trust. That would A, put him over, and B, make him look good in matches. That's what I would worry about. I would just, I seriously would not trust him with a Scott Steiner. Or somebody who is still in for himself. I don't know. What do you think? Am I being a little paranoid about it? I just feel like I agree with you, Dave, that I think the fans would just make us push RVD that heavy. I just like him in the beginning of like a TV or even a low US title situation, just to get him to that point on a WCW stage. But if we put him at a higher than like even above those belts, I don't know if I would put him immediately into like a world title feud. I think I would maybe put him in a main event level with someone like Sting or DDP. I don't know. What do you think? I believe Dave is on mute, or maybe he's not on mute.
I was on mute, and I apologize for that.
Scott Steiner does not want to hear you. Scott Steiner is censoring you.
What I was saying while I was on mute is I think I agree. You would look to put him into maybe put the TV title on him as a starting point. Maybe he wins a tournament for the returning TV title, but very quickly, I think the fans would force you to move him up the card quickly. I don't think he'd stay you start him in that mid-level, but you know, I think we would know he'd get pushed up very quickly and he'd be very quickly moved into higher profile positions and probably elevate the TV title in the process. I mean, he did that with the ECW TV title. So mm-hmm. I think that's one journey to go. Here's another guy to think about signing, and he is definitely a free agent in April 2001. What about Eddie Guerrero? He's come out of rehab.
Oh man.
He got released in 2000. Well, no, actually, sorry, that's not true. He's still in WWE in 2001. He goes to rehab. It's not till later in the year that he's available. But would you look to get him in when he's available? Which would be later in the year acknowledged.
Well, let's put this situation out here, though, Dave, because if WWF paid for his rehab, I can't see him going anywhere. I think if WCW was still cracking, I believe that WWF would have to keep him, because if he is a free agent, that's a guy that WCW would want. So I would think that WWF would probably protect that investment.
Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know if Eddie would go anywhere.
That's fair. All right. Let me throw this fun little question at you, and then we'll start looking at how we're going to use some of these guys.
Okay.
2001, WCW is staying. We're obviously still at war with WWE. Who would you look to try and entice to cross over, to leave WWE and come and join you, recognizing there's obviously some guys that would never leave? We're not going to get an Austin. We're not going to get a Rock. They're not going to come over. Hunter's not going to come over. As much as I know you'd love to get him, Hunter's not going to come over. They're locked in. But is there one or two guys on the WWE roster in early 2001 that you think, you know what, if we get offered the right amount of money, we might be able to bring them over and use them in a bigger way than what they were being used in WWE?
I Well, let's look at who was unhappy in WWF. Now, if WCW wasn't shut down, we don't have an invasion storyline. So WWF would probably still be Austin as a heel at the top. Triple H, we're not sure whether he got hurt or not. So who knows if he's still there. How about a Christian? You know, WWF loved Edge. We would have had to throw a lot of money at Edge. But if we didn't throw a lot of money at Edge and he was WWF loyal, Christian, who eventually would obviously leave, I guess it was 4 years later, to go to TNA, I wouldn't mind grabbing him now and groom him ourselves in WCW to reach that main event level.
Yeah, I mean, 2001 was the year that they really started to put the push, WWF put the push behind Edge. I mean, he wins the King of the Ring in 2001. So they really started that drive, and Christian became the forgotten man. That's certainly one that would be worth considering. Mm-hmm. In 2001, with knowing that WCW haven't been bought out, there's no invasion storyline, the Radicals have just joined the company. I'm not saying this is a case, but with new management in place in WCW, would someone like Chris Jericho consider returning? Because he's watched in the past few months Kurt Angle be elevated over him. He's got the Radicals now in the company and probably going to be, you know, they've been in the company now for 12 months, and Benoit is certainly at that point being given elevation, and Jericho really feels like he's become a little bit of the forgotten man in the company. Do you throw some money at him and see if you can get him to come back?
I try. I'm sure he got pissed off about being, you know, kind of the bitch in the Triple H thing. So there's a good chance. There's a good chance that Jericho would be willing to talk. And I don't know if WWF would allow him to stick around. I don't know if we would be a pawn in a game of back and forth. You know, for his services, I think he would play. Jericho's not a dumb person. I think Jericho is the kind of guy that would play two sides against the middle. Mm-hmm. So I think for Jericho, it would just be a question of who would give him the most money.
Okay.
I'd like to bring him back. I think I can make him a main. You and I can make him a main eventer. It's a question of whether or not the funds are there.
Yep. Okay. Well, I think we might, for our scenario as we move forward, I think we might like to think that maybe we've been able to convince Jericho to come back, that things are different. There's new management in place. The new owners have put a good case to him, and the money was good enough to maybe convince him to come back. And with him is coming his friend Christian. I think we could consider those. Now, they might not be there right at the beginning, but they're guys that might come in through the year as some consideration. All right. So let's get into some practicalities. Let's get moving. We've looked at who we've got. We've looked at some guys that might come in. Who are you building the company around and how are you going to do it? What are your thoughts? What's that top of the end of the card looking like? You know, at the end of March, like you said, Scott Steiner was champion on pay-per-view at the end of the pay-per-view greed. We know that the final Nitro, Booker T takes the title from him. That was a WWF decision, so it's not one we have to necessarily stick with. But who are you looking at building this company around?
Well, definitely Booker T. I build him around Booker T. I would build him around let me think. I'd build him around Booker T, DDP, RVD, all of these letters. RVD, Goldberg. Obviously Sting. Let me just say this one point. I know we keep bringing Cohen back to this. I really love Scott Steiner. In this role playing scenario, I don't know if I could trust him. But I love him as a heel at the top of the card. At the moment, honestly, I keep him as our world heavyweight champion for a while. Maybe towards, well, that depends. Would we have Slamboree? What would be our, well, I know you like to do that. We'll do the booking pay-per-view in a minute, but I would definitely keep Scott Steiner world champion for a while, work him into some other matches. I would do a pretty cool feud with Booker for the US title, but I would definitely build a little tournament for the vacant television title. And that's where I think I would get in a lot of feuds with the new guys, the Christians, the Jerichos, guys like that. I love tournaments. I'm a tournament junkie. But one guy that we definitely are going to elevate is Rey Mysterio. I think Rey is easily the guy. He's ready made, Dave. I mean, he was built those most of the time in WCW as a cruiser, had the awesome matches. Now, under new management, enough screwing around with him, it's time to elevate him. Would you agree?
Absolutely. I think we've seen the way he was used in WWE. He's ready to be moved out of the cruiserweight division. He's been in there. He's been a mainstay. The Filthy Animals got him working with some other guys. Ray's ready to move up. And in fact, maybe a way to generate that is to put him in the TV title tournament. Maybe he and RVD meet in the finals, and then they can start battling over the TV title moving forward. It will allow them to elevate each other. So perhaps RVD comes in as a heel and he's wrestling Ray, but you could just picture that the matches they'd put on will get the fans behind RVD anyway. So I think it allows you to elevate both guys up the picture. And then maybe RVD moves on and Ray is sort of becomes the linchpin for the TV title for a little while and starts working with other guys, and he'll get elevated as a result too. So that's I think I agree. He's one that definitely is going to get a big push. Let me share with you a couple of thoughts I've got about how the top of the card would look, because I think for me, I think one of the big things is the way Sting gets used. I think Sting in 2001 is viewed very similar to the way The Undertaker is by the time 2001 comes on. He's the icon. He's the pinnacle of the company who doesn't need a title. He's a guy that everyone he faces is either a top guy or someone you're trying to elevate into a top guy position. I think that's the role Sting can play. He doesn't even have to be on every event like The Undertaker. He can be used in that veteran sort of role, but you know, he's the pinnacle. He's the guy you gun for. He's the guy that, you know, is who the fans want to see no matter what happens, which is who he was. So I think Sting plays that sort of role with WCW moving forward. Doesn't need the title. Who I think the title needs to be on. Now, you talked about concerns about Scott Steiner being trustworthy, and I share those concerns. And for that reason, you suggest keep the title on him for a little while. I'd probably look at getting the belt. Sorry? Yeah?
No, I agree. No, sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Good.
I was going to say, I look at getting the belt off him sooner. And I'd probably look at getting the belt on Booker T as quickly as I could. I'd probably get the US title off Booker T in some sort of screw job. Maybe Scott Steiner costs it to him. And I'd look at getting the belt, the main belt onto Booker and keep it on him for pretty well the rest of the year. Because the world title had really had bounced around so much, it had become very meaningless, you know, sort of across 99 and 2000. To the point that it didn't mean a lot. And I only have to use these two words to show how badly used the world title was. I just have to say David Arquette. So I think I would allow Booker to elevate that world title, to really bring some meaning to it. A lot of title defenses against a lot of different guys, almost very reminiscent of how Bret Hart's first WWE title run went in 92-93, where he just faced lots of different guys and really made it a working man's title. That's what I would do with Booker. And then Goldberg becomes the guy that you're building towards. Goldberg, maybe Goldberg Steiner getting back into a feud between those two. He returns in a blaze of glory, and provided he's working with our leadership, the way we spoke about earlier, Goldberg becomes mm-hmm. that player that you can build towards a big match between Goldberg and Booker down the track. Maybe that becomes a journey that you head towards to see, can Goldberg regain his world title?
I'm actually... I'm surprised, Dave, because usually I'm the one who's less patient with slugs and degenerate and poor wrestlers than you are. And you're the one that wants to kick Scott Steiner to the curb faster than I do. I'm kind of surprised by that. But
I just want to get the belt off him.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I would have Booker. So let's do this. Assume to me that the April pay-per-view would be, what was always their April pay-per-view? Spring Stampede?
Stampede, I think.
Yeah. So we're booking Spring Stampede 2001. You would immediately do Booker and Steiner for the title.
I would. And I would have Goldberg come in and spear Scott Steiner to cost him the title, and Booker wins it.
Okay.
And that way you can start a feud between Goldberg and Scott Steiner, and Booker can move on and, like I said, become that working man's champion.
I like that idea. I personally think that what will happen is Steiner will job to Booker, then Steiner will probably job to Goldberg, get pissed off, and end up leaving and going to the WWF. So
he might.
Have fun, Vince. He's all yours. Now, who would be our U.S. champion? Now, who did you say was on your mind?
Well, we got to get the title off of Booker.
Right.
And, you know, look, you probably want to put it on someone on a heel that can work with a lot of different guys. Who, again, you're wanting to create a bit of stability in the company for a while. So you might, you know, maybe that's where you utilize. I'm just trying to think. Some of the guys we talked about earlier, and I'm just going to have a look back at the. I mean, you might look at getting the belt back onto Lance Storm. He had been the US champion before, and that well, maybe Bam Bam Bigelow could be.
Oh, okay.
At the top of the line. We talked about keeping him. He certainly has the stature to maybe run with the belt for a short period of time while you look at elevating some other guys.
I like that idea.
And I'd be doing that on a Nitro. I'd be getting it off him on Nitro very quickly. So off Booker, that is. So this would be a Nitro thing. And then you can run a US title match at the pay-per-view between your new champion and maybe, you know, someone who's a bit of fun that doesn't necessarily need to win. Maybe like an Ernest Miller or you know, someone of that sort of that stature that could just have a title match, but it's not going to be a changeover at the pay-per-view.
I want to make the U.S. title because, you know me, Dave, I'm a big fan of booking. You know, I love mid-card titles, love the IC title. And I've always been a fan of the United States title. I have that belt sitting right here. That specific belt, the WCW, the one from the 90s, 2000s. I would book the hell out of that belt. So I want to make that belt just as, instead of being a, because I felt like after a while, I felt like all the belts in WCW were just trinkets for the NWO to, you know, hang off their belt buckle. I really want to, for me, Dave, as we're doing this, I really want to make the championships back to when you watch Crockett in the 80s, and I watch it now, and I, you know, when we used to have an amazing show, you know, Crock and Roll, Sean and Dr. G and shit, and all those guys, the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship meant something. The United States Championship meant something. The television title meant something. Those belts all meant something at different levels of card. WCW, the belts were just trinkets for Hogan and Steiner and Nash and guys to spray paint wieners on or whatever. You know, like it got disgraceful after a while. So the big focus for me is to really promote the fact, and you said it yourself just now, and I agree with you 100%, a guy like Booker T will make the WCW world title feel like a world championship again and have it for guys that want to get after it. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And I feel the same way about the US title. I really want a crop of young, hungry studs to go out there and fight for that belt. Having said that, I would have Sting win it. No, I'm just kidding. that's not a bad thing. If we needed somebody just to stabilize the title while we kind of work out the future challengers, etc., Sting is a guy that I wouldn't mind giving it to. Sting's not what – one thing I love about Sting, and we'll love Sting forever, and we know he's obviously retired, but Sting, you know – Steve Borden, Sting. Sting is one of those guys you know you could trust to – do the right thing every time. Yes. So if you said this thing, I want you to win the TV title. I want you to win the U.S. title tournament. I want you to be U.S. champion for this amount of time. While you're defending it, come back to us. Think of guys you would like to drop it to that we think we could build. And I think Sting's the kind of guy that will go, listen, I love Christian. Or it's really time for Chris Jericho to be that number three or four guy in the company. I'll put him over, or I'll put this guy over. Sting is the kind of guy that I think you and I, as official executives of WCW, could go, yeah, I agree with him. I agree with him. That's a guy that I would most definitely trust to tell me, put this guy over, put this guy over, put this guy over.
So maybe, I would wait on that. If we put the belt on Bigelow on like the first Nitro to get it off Booker, and then at the pay-per-view, you have Bigelow and Sting face each other for the US title.
Correct.
Hmm.
And then Bigelow, and then Dave, Bigelow could be a future opponent for Booker.
Yes.
You could elevate Bigelow to the main event. And I think Bigelow, you could have a couple of, you could have that be a multi-pay-per-view feud. Maybe they wrestle to a double something and then have, you know, a cage or a falls count anywhere, whatever, as we get to the summertime Great American Bash. Long term, let's just book to the end of 01 before we go too deep in the weeds. Obviously, we're going to book to our big show, which is going to be Starrcade 01. Mm-hmm. If you're looking ahead, Dave, and I know you're probably, you've got this on your list, I know, coming up. At least world title wise, what are you looking at with after Booker wins?
Yep. All right. So, as I said, I would have Booker. I've got two potential long-term storylines here that I run off, and both revolve around one thing happening with Booker T.
Okay.
I think Booker T, as we said, goes on a run. He starts beating everyone he faces. And I think later in the year, and I'm talking about late in the year, we're talking October, November-ish, Booker becomes a little arrogant. Maybe we start to have a little bit of a heel turn happen with Booker late in the year because of his success. He's just like, he becomes that arrogant persona, a very, very similar to his King Booker role, but without the royal element to it. Because he'll have probably faced most of your bad guys by late in the year. And we've spoken about guys that we're going to, you know, other guys that are franchised to work around. So I think your ultimate Starrcade main event may actually be Booker T versus Goldberg. And to do that properly, you probably want to turn Booker heel. And so he starts to become arrogant later in the year, talks himself up. But the fans start to see the arrogance. They see the heel turn. They want to see Goldberg get his shot. And so Starrcade, you build towards that as the pinnacle. Goldberg versus Booker for the world title. I think that's a direction you go. That's one direction. The other direction to go, and I... I only say this because I'm building. Look, it's an idea that I've had for a long time about how this person could be used. But I think in light of what's happened in the last few weeks on WWE business side of things, might seem a little bit copycat style. But you've got Dustin Rhodes in the company, and Dustin, you know, in 2001, Dustin's come back to WCW. When he first started his career, he was the natural. He was the future. He's a great worker in 2001. Maybe you play the story of Dustin wanting to emulate his father. He just teamed with his father at Greed. Maybe it's the, I've never competed for the world title. I want my shot. I want to prove that I can do what my dad did. And so you build that story up through the year. And again, Booker becomes arrogant. And so maybe at Starrcade, Dustin gets his shot at the world title. He might not win it, but you could build that story because Dusty won at Starrcade. Dusty got his shots at the title at Starrcade. So here's Dustin trying to emulate his dad, do what his dad did, and get a shot at the world title on the biggest show of the year. So there's two thoughts I've got for where the world title picture would look at, but they are both depend on the fact that you've built this world title as a pinnacle thing. It just has not changed hands between April and Starrcade.
Mm-hmm. So Dustin finishes the story before little brother finishes the story.
Well,
a lot of story finishing in that family.
I know. He may not finish the story, though. Maybe Dustin doesn't win. But I think the storyline is there of I want to try and emulate my dad because that's what it was always portrayed as. He was He was the natural. He was Dusty's son and trying to do what his dad had done.
Mm-hmm. I also think I would put Chris Jericho versus Sting for the U.S. title.
Hmm.
And I think that's a moment for Jericho to be U.S. champion throughout 2002. And then eventually when you get to Starrcade 02, we can discuss him reaching that moment to be WCW champion. Because that's the next guy for me.
Yeah.
That's the next guy for me is Jericho to be world champion after this moment.
And I think you'll have RVD in a prime role by that point as well. I think he will be.
Yeah, right, I agree.
And he might be probably whoever, Dustin or Goldberg, who isn't in the main event, probably RVD is going against the other one.
Right.
And I also think, you know, that's the time of the year by Starrcade. I think the way Elevation may have worked, I think that might also be the time you might consider putting the Cruiserweight title on AJ Styles. You could build him up through the year in the cruiser ranks, and whether it be a Gregory Helms or Billy Kidman, someone mm-hmm. who's got that, you know, got that cruiser title on them come Starrcade, I think you might look to give AJ Styles his cruiserweight shot by Starrcade.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that because you're going to need to fill the Ray gap, and AJ's a guy I like to see do that. Let's talk tags.
Yep.
We talked about keeping Palumbo and O'Hare. I like Lance Storm with a tag partner. How about Lance Storm? How about we do the Un-Americans before the Un-Americans?
Lance Storm and Christian?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Add it to the whole Canada thing.
Yep.
Maybe you could do a faction of Canadians and include Jericho, and he would be kind of your main eventer.
Yep. Almost play off of the Hart Foundation in 97. Jericho comes in. You've got the Team Canada idea, but Jericho comes in and takes over Team Canada.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
And get rid
and
of
if anybody team. Walks into our office, Dave, and if anybody, Dave, walks in our office and says, what do you think about a new NW? You're fired. those words are banned.
That's right.
Never again. Horse beaten ground. Done. I don't care if you shiny it up and do NWO 2002. No, that's not happening. No. I have a guy, not to go back, but I got one guy I want to add that maybe WWF we could steal from because he might be a pretty solid heel, and he could be. I just thought of it because he's kind of like half out of it in 2001 and maybe even in 2002. Perhaps we bring back X-Pac.
Okay,
and bring him back as Six-Pac or whatever the hell we want to call him. Because he could be a great heel because everybody naturally hates him. He might be a guy that we'd like to have around for veteran stability.
Yeah.
Just thought of that when I said NWO to myself. what other tags? What other guys? I feel like DDP would be good in a tag team.
Yeah, you could picture him teaming. You know, do you put him with a young guy to help elevate a young guy, or do you put him with a more veteran talent?
I kind of like the young guy angle. Yeah, I kind of like the young guy angle with that.
So yeah, DD, I mean, who would you bring in? Who could you utilize in that role? That's a really good question.
Let me think.
Do you look at just as a bit of I'm just thinking as a bit of fun. What if earlier in the year Gregory Helms maybe in the how's this for a bit of a storyline? Okay, and just bear with me. I've got to paint a picture. So Gregory Helms earlier in the year, he comes into our time period as W says the cruiserweight champion, and maybe he loses the belt to Kidman or to Chavo or someone. Doesn't matter who he loses the belt to, but in wake of Scott Steiner's loss of the world title, he goes on a rampage. He starts belting, just destroying guys. And one of the guys, he interferes in a match that Gregory Helms is in. He just comes in because he's being Scott Steiner and lays waste. And Gregory Helms suffers what appears to be some form of concussion during the match, storyline concussion. And in subsequent weeks, starts to think that he's some sort of superhero. And we get the development of the Hurricane character through the year. What about Hurricane and DDP teaming up later in the year?
Yeah, I like that.
The DDP is almost that trying to help, you know, initially maybe it's just trying to help Hurricane recover. And he's always the one trying to, you're not a superhero. You're not a superhero, Greg. You know, you know, Helms is convinced he's a hero. And so the encouragement, yeah, you start to develop that that positive character that DDP had. He looks for the positive. Okay, well, I'll work with this. And so he starts to encourage the development of the superhero character and teams and mentors Helms through the back end of the year. And they become a tag team, and perhaps they're at Starrcade. They are going against the team of, as you said, Christian and Lance Storm for the tag titles.
Right. And then eventually, obviously, as we evolve, we talked about the team of Palumbo and O'Hare, who would be the tag champs as we take over. Obviously, they would eventually lose the straps, but then they could split up. We could add them to our young core of Elevation.
And here's probably someone you'd want to have in a prominent singles position come Starrcade. You know, he'd be someone you might have in a very prominent role. He might even be facing RVD at Starrcade.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think, talking about guys out in the indies that we could scoop up, perhaps to bolster our tag division, we find Mr. Storm and Mr. Harris and bring in America's Most Wanted?
Let me give you a little bit of inside trading, because we wouldn't have to look too far, because in 2000 and 2001, they were on developmental contracts with WCW. And they were actually on development contracts in they were put on contracts in late 2000. So I agree with you totally. We could be bringing them in and building them up through the year.
Yeah, totally. Because I love those guys. They'd be my team. I cultivate them because they're cool.
Yes. They basically have them in a position that whoever wins the tag title match at Starrcade going into the new year, America's Most Wanted are the next team in line. So they're probably going to have a match at Starrcade that they're going to win. And, you know, could be against any couple of guys that have been working together, but America's Most Wanted are really being painted in the picture of coming out of Starrcade and moving into 2002. They're the next tag team that we're looking to get behind.
Correct. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
One more thing before we wrap up. I think I would like both on screen and off screen, to keep Medusa around and try to build a women's division. A real women's division, not flim flam shit. I think Medusa would be perfect backstage and in front of the camera to start a women's division. What do you think?
I think that would be really good. I think you've got a couple of, we know there's some talent out there that does get picked up by WWE in the next 12 to 18 months that you might be able to get in front of, because if you can look to build it with that that ambition to show that this is about women wrestling, and it's that women's revolution concept that we've got today, that hey, we're not just going to do bra and panties and, you know, let girls walk around with their boobs showing and that's what it's about.
Right.
But hey, we're going to focus on the women as critical players in our company, the same way they do with the cruisers. Yeah, I think it would work. I think it's something that you could utilize, and you probably pick up a couple of, you'd probably be able to get a couple of the girls in WWE to come back. The working girls. You might get your Luna Vachons to come back over, and maybe your Tories and your Jacquelines who can work. But you've got a fresh crop coming through in those couple of years. You might be able to get your hands on Lita before WWF really make use of her.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think that would work. I agree.
Okay.
Let me throw one last thing just as we finish up. There's one person we haven't really talked about.
Talk
about how I would use him. And that's the Nature Boy. That's the Nature Boy. We talked about him a little bit when we talked about bringing him in. I think Flair in 2001 would be someone you need to find a prominent role for. And I think the way you could use him in 2001 in the new company is as your on-screen authority figure who is going to compete at times. So Flair could be used in that authority role. You've got him in this suit. He cuts a hell of a promo. He doesn't need to be working every week. But every now and then, he's got to step into the ring to take care of business. And he could be both a face and a heel. So he could do it on either side of the equation, and it would work. And that allows you to keep him functioning. It allows you to keep him in a very prominent role on a weekly basis. At the same time, you don't need him in the ring all the time. So if he's having any of his confidence issues, you're not wanting him to work every week, but at the same time, you know he can help elevate guys. You know he can further the story, and when needs be, he'll put on a good match still. That's how I'd use Flair.
I don't know if I love Flair, and I would love for him to stay in the company. I would only ever put him back in the world title picture under very extreme circumstances if we needed like a legendary fix kind of thing. But for the most part, I agree with you. I think we put him in shots to kind of elevate a little bit, maybe win a match here and there. But I do think that I'd like to see him oversee our development of the roster, just like Dusty. That's why I would love to have those two together, because I trust both of them on how to properly elevate the roster to that level and grow with them. But yeah, Flair, I would put on camera, you know, as needed. I'd probably want him on camera for the next, you know, few pay-per-views, just to kind of restabilize the roster And then maybe he takes a breather, and then we bring him back if we need him, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah, I agree with you on that, Dave. Same thing with Dusty. You could do the same thing with Dusty. Now, one last thing. Who would you have for our announcers?
All right. Well, I'm one of the guys that strongly believes that with the closing of ECW, I'd be throwing money at Joey Styles and bring him in as your lead announcer and let Tony Schiavone move into a producer role. I think you need to keep Tony in the company. But I think it was clear by 2000, 2001, he was burnt out. He was over it. I think his passion wasn't there. Now, I know he's got a bit more passion back since he's been in AEW. But I think in 2000, 2001, he needed a break from being in front of the camera. So I would use him in a producer role to work with your announcers and your production and all that. And I would bring in Joey Styles as your lead announcer.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think he's got nothing to do. And I think, you know, we would let him thrive. I think he'd have an amazing second career. You know, second chapter of his career with WCW. Okay. I was curious what you would do with Tony. I think eventually, Tony, we might put back somewhere if we decide to keep both Nitro and Thunder. I was thinking we would...
TV show, yeah.
I was thinking Tony would stay on Nitro for the time being, and we put Joey on Thunder and elevate Thunder to something better than it was in the end, which was unwatchable dreck. So, but that would be us. We would make that better. Totally. Now, when we do the 25th anniversary of Starrcade, do we do two nights? No, we're not going to ask that question. I would stay regional to a certain extent. I don't know if I would do anything in the Northeast even at that point. Maybe do Jersey. You know, I don't know if I would do MSG. I wouldn't try to walk into MSG. We're not that stupid. I would fortify Charlotte, Greensboro, Atlanta, Norfolk, our usual, you know, Greenville, that lip. Northern Florida, Jacksonville. Yeah. You know, maybe, WCW already was getting into Vegas because Halloween Havoc was an MGM every year. So
you wouldn't promote it as a regional company, but you would make sure that your TV shows and your pay-per-views are in certain markets that you can guarantee you're going to get your crowds in. And then it's like anything. People see that, oh, there's a crowd. It's getting interest. The product is getting better. And then as it improves, then you can start moving out again.
Right. Yep. And I think we would try to expand to other, overseas, foreign markets. I think we should try to be the first one to do a legit pay-per-view in the UK.
Yeah.
I wouldn't mind us doing it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon if need be. Why not? Look outside, think outside the box, you know? Do a special price that month, a matinee. You know, maybe do $24.95 instead of $30, you know, or $40. You know, we do a super brawl or something in the UK in February, something like that.
Yeah,
and then see if we could build. You know,
absolutely. Well, we do know that even in 2000, WCW was still drawing very strong in international markets, and maybe
yes,
maybe
they
WCW
were.
Also put on the first pay per view down in Australia. It might be something that we could work
towards. Yes. Yes, we would, Dave. For you, we'd do that. That would be funny. All right. Well, I think we did a pretty good job here of establishing what could be. And then as time progresses, we could entertain, you know, obviously if WCW was still kicking, we wouldn't have a TNA because there'd be no need for it. And I think I've said this to you in the past. I think this was asked on a mailbag. If WCW was still going, I don't think we would have a TNA, but I do think we'd still have a Ring of Honor, though.
I agree, because Ring of Honor came out of the ashes more of ECW in Philadelphia.
Correct. Correct. So I think ROH would start, but I don't think, obviously, with Jarrett still with the company, we wouldn't need, or there would be no need for a TNA. There'd be no need for it. So, and no, we would never do a six-sided ring because we're not stupid. So, well, I hope you enjoyed this, folks. I hope you enjoyed our kind of delving into what could happen if WWF had competition to this day and see if it would enhance them or rosters would flip. Maybe a guy like a CM Punk would go to WCW instead of ECW in a few years, you know?
Mm.
Or WCW instead of WWE and, you know, after his Ring of Honor time. I don't know. Daniel Bryan or Bryan Danielson, you know.
He was finishing his story in WCW rather than in WWE.
Yeah. A guy like Bryan Danielson. Maybe our WCW would look like current AEW, except with a better, you know, better administrative personalities. I think I trust us more than anybody else. But who knows? Anyway, I hope you enjoyed our delving through the looking glass this month. I thought it was a fun little topic for Dave and I. And Dave, great job as always doing your part and coming up with an amazing topic for us tonight, because I thought that was a lot of fun. Because sometimes you wonder, you know, you may think you don't wonder, but sometimes you wonder. So, Dave, I know you say it every month, but in case this is someone's first episode, where can everyone find you? To chat.
If you want to reach out and connect with me, send me messages. You can reach me through Facebook. You'll often find me lurking around the Place to Be pages. So yeah, feel free to drop me a line. If you want to hear more, check out the Chronoso podcast on the North South Connection. We've just dropped a new episode, as you're listening to this episode, it'll be about a few days ago, the latest episode dropped, and we're on the journey between WrestleMania 5 and SummerSlam 89. We're picking up a few key TV matches and stuff around there. I got to review a match that I was actually a little disappointed in. I thought it had the series had a great reputation. Unfortunately, I must have got the one that wasn't quite as good, but it was the Rockers and the Rougeaus. It wasn't bad, but I'd read a lot of stuff that their series in 89, they had some near like 4 to 5 star classics. Unfortunately, the one I saw didn't live up to that high reputation.
Right. Yes, please. You can find Dave and all of us on the Place to Be group page. On that page, by the way, now, unfortunately, as you're listening to this, the poll's already closed. But as we're recording, it's still open. But obviously, every month I put a poll up for what show you would like, you listeners would like Greg Diener and I to do on this month's episode of WrestleTracks. We had a great time last month doing WrestleMania 6. Dave, I'm telling you now, since in our world at the moment as I'm talking to you, the poll's still open, and I don't know if you voted yet. The choices were, at this point you may know what it is, but the choices were Spring Stampede 94, In Your House, Good Friends, Better Enemies 1996, and TNA Lockdown 2008. So I'm actually saying this to Dave because as we're in this realm of the show, the polls are still open, so if he hasn't voted, please do. By the time you listen to this, the poll would have closed, and you'll probably know what show we're doing. But I want to let everyone know, and I've said it already, I'm going to mention on most of our platforms. In May, besides the May ballot, we're going to open up a thread where I want all of you listeners to give us your ideas on what shows you'd like us to put on June's ballot. Not pick what show you want us to do, but what shows you'd like to see on the ballot to be voted on for the month of June. We're going to try and do this twice this year. We're going to try and do it in June, and maybe we'll do it again in December. The only prerequisites are it's got to be something that can be easily accessible, and it obviously has to have taken place in the month of June. Duh. So think about that. You too, Dave. Think about it. And when I open up that thread next month in May, let us know, you know, let us know what shows you would like. You know, what cool shows happened in the month of June throughout wrestling history. Could be a house show, could be a TV episode, could be a pay-per-view, if it's something that's easily accessible for Greg and I to get. We'll do it. So there you go. And you can find me on Twitter at Scott C. Podfather and also at PTB and Wrestling. Have a great rest of your April. And Dave and I will be back, of course, in May. We'll come up with another awesome topic. Until then, wear your Starrcade 2007 t-shirt proudly through the looking glass. Lady, can you show us your hand?